Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
Anything interesting happened this week?
Yeah, quite weak. Quiet.
Oh,
not
boy.
A lot going on.
Yeah, well, WWDC is Monday, so I'm sure
it'll pick right up. Yeah. Everything will get ironed out after that.
Yeah.
What timing. Man, you could not...
Yeah, I've been thinking a lot because on the Friday before WWDC, and really the week before the developer conference, the last thing I need, when I'm also trying to fix bugs in our website that we launched last week, the last thing I want to do is sit down and write, you know, yet another of these long stream of everybody having an opinion about Apple's App Store policies, especially since how many times have we written about Apple's App Store policies? And earlier this week,
so
I thought, well, why should I even bother? Because in a day or two, it's going to get secretly resolved, silently resolved, because Apple does that a lot. And then it's sort of like sound and fury. And then, of course, Apple doubled down and said, no, we mean it. reject me. Reject you.
Yeah. Right? Boy, it is. I don't know. Somebody had a really good tweet. I think it was Becky Hansmeyer, the developer. Who tweeted, like, man, I bet they're pretty glad that they don't have to, like, stare out into a sea of 6,000 developers next week.
Yeah, I mean, no dissent will be registered because the developers will just be booing the TV screens in their houses, and so they won't.
Yep.
Yeah, it's still bad timing, and and I saw somebody, maybe even in our member Slack, refer to this as sort of a tempest in a teapot, and my comment back was, yes, but the teapot contains politicians and regulators. Like, it's not just like, well, it's just some developers who are angry. Also, I actually saw somebody on Twitter who will go nameless, who basically said, but the silent majority of developers thinks it's fine, which I they didn't say silent majority, but that was absolutely what they were trying to do, is say, well, I know that everybody that you see is complaining about it, but the fact is the people who don't say anything are actually who everybody is, and it's fine. So don't listen to the people who are complaining, which is just...
Then again, a lot of the people who are complaining have very, you know, a lot of influence and are very loud. But
and
the question is, how many people in the silent majority, quote, aren't complaining because they're scared?
Well, this is exactly it. Is first off, complaining has results. We've seen that protesting has results. It's funny how making a stink has results, because you think you're in a position of ultimate power, but it turns out that then the public is alerted and people get up in arms, and then it becomes a problem and you need to deal with it. This is damage control 101. But as Ben Thompson pointed out from Stratechery, he basically went on Twitter and said, if you have had an issue with this thing, just email me and complete confidence, and here's my Signal account, and like, whatever, just let me know. And he said he heard from like more than 50 people, including major developers, all of whom say that Apple jerks them around like this all the time with inconsistent things, and they don't speak out about it at all because of fear. Because the fact is, their business is predicated on, in whole or in part, on being present on an iPhone. And, you know, for me, the thing that I've been turning over in my head that I probably won't write is that there's sort of two threads here. One is a curated app store controlled by Apple has user benefits. And the in-app purchase system has user benefits. Your credit card is saved. Your payment method is saved. It passes through the same payment method every time because it's using Apple's payment APIs. You can trust it. The filtering of the app store is good for you. It gets out a lot of garbage. I would argue, in fact, I would argue for people who say, like, see, this is why we need this. The problem is actually that stuff does get abused. You see all of these apps that are like a free trial followed by $40 a month, and the whole it's just a scam subscription. Like, people are doing that all the time, and there is lots of garbage in the app store. But yes, it is a safer place because Apple offers some level of curation, and I don't think anybody is arguing against that. I think the problem is that Apple doesn't always make decisions that are in the user's benefit. The App Store exists, and a lot of the rules are there to protect users. But some of the rules aren't about protecting users. They aren't about a good user experience. They're about enriching Apple because Apple has the power. And this week, what bothered me about that statement that came out from Phil Schiller in the App Review letter that got released is They are trying to say that the rule is benefiting users, and it's like gaslighting, in my opinion, because it doesn't, it's not a benefit to users what they're doing. What they're doing is because they can, and they want to scrape money from companies that can't afford not to be on the App Store.
Yeah. And I mean, the shot also about, like, hey, you've had a lot of stuff on our store for years, and it's all free, and we made no money off you.
Oh.
That was going to be my lead.
That was going to be my lead. Was I learned at Macworld a long time ago that Steve Jobs considered everything in the ecosystem around Apple to be a parasite, and that Apple was the only company capable of doing greatness and creating things, and then everybody else, media, third-party developers, accessory makers, were parasites on Apple's greatness. And that statement this week showed that that attitude is alive and well, at least in somebody at Apple. Maybe it's just Phil Schiller. Maybe it's been inculcated in the whole group. I don't know. But that statement is the one that really set me off, because that is classic Apple attitude, which is, you built Basecamp on our greatness, which is, first off, not true. And second off, it's like you're doing them a favor by allowing them to be in the App Store, as if no value from having Basecamp on your platform accrues to your platform, because it only can go one way. Is Apple's greatness radiating out into the world? So infuriating.
Well, and more of the point too, like, you know, it's also all about them saying, like, the only thing we care about is our bottom line, right? Like, and
right, you're a bag of money.
Even if that's true,
to us. What have you done for us lately?
Even if that is true, because you are a capitalist corporation, messaging that is a very different. Like, that is, as a choice, well,
and those arguments go together, because as Marco Arment pointed out this week, if Apple truly believes that the value of the platform is entirely created by Apple, and its high volume and high margin hardware business is entirely created because of Apple software and not third party developers, it's delusional.
Yeah, just shut the App Store down and see how long that goes. I think I can see, this is the most charitable thing I can say, is I can see why Apple would think that this is violating the rules that it put out there, which is a different statement from those rules should be there,
exactly.
Or even those rules are enforced uniformly.
Yeah.
But I understand what they think they are arguing about. The problem is that doesn't, it's just not something that looks good for them, right? Like, it's, even if that's true, there are so many fundamental problems here. I mean, we talked for years. I think I could dig up a piece that I wrote, you know,
10
however
years
many
ago.
Years ago, about when Apple, like, added the, like, taking a chunk of subscriptions, right? I was definitely
still
at Macworld for that. Definitely remember writing a piece about it. And at the time, it even seemed preposterous. Like, really? You're like, are you really even doing anything at that point? Like, and I think that it's just so, I think they need to take a hard look at that. Again, there are people who are saying, like, they're not going to do anything about this next week. If you're expecting them to do anything about this next week, you're way off base, because, like, they don't want to look like they are caving.
Well, Michael Gartenberg, who worked at Apple,
had
a tweet today, and he said, well, it's not going to happen soon. What's going to happen is they're going to let it die down, and then they'll make some repairs in private and not look, and they'll save face because they don't want to look bad in public
anymore.
And they don't want to look like they, which they do right now, and they don't want to cave in public. And, you know, he worked for Phil Schiller,
also,
so I believe him. Right.
Yeah.
That
I mean,
consistent.
It also kind of seems like fundamentally, you know, what they need is a, like, executive level developer relation person, maybe, who reports to Tim and not to Phil, because,
well, they put the App Store in, and they put the App Store in Phil's hands is the thing.
Did,
so this is Phil Schiller.
Yeah. And
it's,
I think there's problems with that, I guess, is the point. Like, maybe that is not the right answer.
Well,
or maybe there are parts of that that should not be reporting to the marketing person.
I think the one of the problems is, because Apple is not a divisional company, so there's no, like, service division and hardware division and all of that. What it means is the pressure on increasing service revenue is spread around the company. And I do think what it's going to take is a conversation among people, including Phil Schiller and Tim Cook. If they do think this is an issue, they need to have a conversation about ways in which the desire to increase services revenue has impacts on their developer relationships and on regulation potentially against them, because this is absolutely a point of vulnerability. It's not going to save Basecamp, but it is a point of vulnerability for Apple and Google that the EU and potentially the United States will at some point say, you can't, you know, we're going to make it so you have to change your practices in 5 years, right? But it may happen, and say, okay, our quest for services revenue, you know what? Squeezing every last cent out of services that are not fundamentally part of our platform, but have little, you know, client apps that run on the platform, is not worth it given the scrutiny that we're getting. So we need to back off of this. The fact that they doubled down amazes me because of the regulatory scrutiny that's going on, and also because of the fact that
they literally got investigated that day.
That day,
the EU launched its investigation that day,
and because it's so far afield that it's like the worst. It's for me, it's the worst case scenario, because it's basically them saying, you have to pay us a portion of your money that you get from your customers, even though your service isn't on our platform, so that you can run. It's like it's rent seeking behavior, as Ben Thompson called it, because you know you want to be on our platform. But the true message there is you can't afford to not have an app in the App Store for your business, because that's the truth is there's no business that cannot afford. That's too many negatives. Every business must have an app in the App Store. Right? Like, the iPhone is not a huge percentage of global phone market share, but it doesn't matter. It's enough.
It's
an important enough part that you could essentially say that it's impossible for a business to operate without having an iPhone app. And Apple knows this, and Apple's basically saying, that's great. And I know that it's not exactly you need to pay us a percentage of all your revenue, but it is you need to create an in-app purchase that uses our system that shares that money with us and put it front and center in your app. And this is where I argue they say it's consumer-friendly, and I say it's not consumer-friendly, because what they're saying is it's more consumer-friendly to go download a services app for free and open it and see the login screen, but also see you can subscribe with an in-app purchase link. I think that's confusing. I think that's more confusing to say there are two ways of paying for this service, one via in-app purchase and one over here on the website. Plus, the service is not constrained to the iPhone, right? So now Apple takes 30%, and then after the first year, 15% of Hey.com because you happened to sign up on the iPhone because, let's be honest, because you were confused and you thought, oh, I guess I need to pay now, when that's not actually true. And you may be using Hey.com on all sorts of devices, including non-Apple devices, but it doesn't matter. They get a percentage of everything because you came in through their door. And that's the other part of the fantasy here is Apple believes that people just search on the App Store for things and download them and then go, oh, I'm confused about why this doesn't work. Like, anybody is going to get the Hey app via an App Store search without being aware that it's a service and being on the website. But Apple believes that that's the case, that the world revolves around the App Store.
You argue a much more hostile user case scenario where you download the app and it's like, you have to log in. We can't tell you where to go your account.
Which is dumb, but
it's terrible. That's the Kindle behavior.
I would argue that that's okay, and Apple says it's not. But I would argue that that's okay, first off, because it's okay for a whole bunch of other apps, but not this app because reasons, which is really dumb. But reader apps, including Dropbox, it's so frustrating. But
and somebody pointed out in our own member Slack that Fastmail, which is a service, does the same thing. If you download Fastmail, I did this morning because I was curious, it just gives you a login prompt when you go there.
Let me tell you,
why is that good?
Those examples don't hold any water with me, because I imagine every single one of those services is going to be given the same ultimatum as Hey, right? Like, Fastmail is in the store
now. A lot longer.
Yeah, but they're going to get it now, right? I feel like they're going to get it. They're all going to get it now.
It just seems like so many consumers are going to be upset about it, though. Yeah. Like, if Fastmail goes, you know what? We don't want to deal with that. So, like, you can just set up your app or whatever to get mail from our service. Fine.
My point is there are a lot of apps that are just endpoints for a service that exists in the cloud. And, you know, downloading an app and then logging into your account is not an unreasonable thing. Unless you're Apple and you're making this case that, oh, no, but people are just going to search for mail and they're going to find this thing and they're going to open it and they're going to be very confused. Now, the counter argument is just put in an app purchase and maybe even make it cost more. And some of your customers are going to be on the in-app purchase track and some of them aren't. And you're just going to have to deal with it. Like that. That's the counter argument here is you could play ball with Apple. What I would say is, how is that better for anybody except for Apple's like line, right? Like having a second class of user that are using in-app purchase subscriptions instead of regular subscriptions. It's just, I don't see how that's anything
Frankly, and frankly, I think the biggest issue here for me is that Apple dug this hole for themselves. Like this is a choice that they made because they wanted to basically reap all of that.
They wanted to maximize services revenue.
They wanted that. Exactly. They wanted all that money. So they backed themselves into the corner. Sounds like it's worse for them than it actually is, right? Like they're doing okay. It's not like this is hurting them other than in public perception, but like they have gotten themselves into this situation of having to defend this behavior of things where rules are, you know, enforced somewhat arbitrarily or inconsistently, where they look like the bad guy, frankly, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and that's not a situation that I think that they want to be in, but they have essentially made that bed for themselves. And I don't know what the solution is here, right? There are a lot of problems with any solution that you come up with. Like, for example, I was thinking like, well, why don't you have, for years I've said like, have an option where it's like, look, we'll handle all the payment processing and all this junk for you. We take 30%. You don't want that? Fine. Roll your own system. That's on you. We're not going to take any money off it if you do that. But people will point out like, well, then somebody else comes along as a middleman. It's like, hey, we'll do all your payment processing for 15%, right? Like how many people jump ship at that point? And maybe that's another company that's a competitor like Facebook or Google. And all of a sudden, you know, they've seen a lot of control or data or something like that. I mean, you know, so there are problems with any of these feasible solutions, but it also feels like they just extended themselves so far in terms of like, well, if we're going to have in-app purchase, are we going to have subscriptions? Like all of that we need to get a chunk of too. And it kind of feels like at a certain point, it's just, it's not even nickel and diming. It's money grubbing. It's feeling like you just want a cut of everything that is on your platform. And other stores, let's be clear, other digital stores do operate in this way. Other physical retail stores, though the model is different, get a percentage of sales. That's how they stay in business. But, you know, a lot of those scenarios are cases where, you know, you have other venues. Like a physical store, if I want to sell a book, there are other physical bookstores, right? Like, I do have that option. It's harder on things like game platforms where it's like, you want to be on Xbox, you want to be on PlayStation, you got to play ball because they control the platform. But there are competing platforms, right? Yeah. Like there is the PC, there is the PlayStation, there is the Xbox.
Also,
like, there are
different
ways to handle that.
I'm going
to
stop you there because also playing a game is not essential. It's fun, but it's not essential.
Yes.
But like using a smartphone is, I would argue, essential. There's no alternative to using a smartphone. You don't have to play a game to live your life and do your job. You kind of have to have a smartphone. You kind of do. And that's where it verges over to me. And like the level is higher than like, oh, well, you know, the cut that Sony takes from a PlayStation game. It's like, yes.
Well, but if you're the developer of that game, that's a different story.
That's
right?
True.
Like it's
I'm
a developer versus consumer.
But
angle.
I'm just saying pure consumer side here. Besides which, if you're a developer, unless you're taking money from them to have it be an exclusive, it's available elsewhere. Right. So it's not the same as this where there's just the one place to go. You could release it on PC and sell it yourself if you wanted to. And you would be able to take all that money.
Absolutely.
So I think that's I think you're right. I can make the counter argument that why shouldn't Apple benefit from Basecamp building a business on their, you know, at least in part on Apple's platforms. My counter argument would be Apple makes a whole lot of money from its hardware sales, right? Like it's already benefiting.
They're already benefiting. Yeah.
Spectacularly from
the
this.
Ecosystem. And like the overall cumulative effect of having all those apps available and all those great services is absolutely helping them.
And I would say something that we've talked about before, I know, which is I think in-app purchase on Apple's platforms is actually super. I mean, I mentioned it earlier. I think it's really good. I think that Apple should compete on in-app purchase as a feature and make it so that developers are motivated to give Apple a cut because the in-app purchase experience is so slick. Because, like, honestly, in a lot of cases, in-app purchase is the right decision for users because it's so easy to use. So what I would say is Apple's attitude towards somebody like Basecamp should not be, you're not in the store unless you cut us in. It should be, we want to talk to you about how it would be good for your users to have a frictionless experience to get them into your service using our platform. And having Basecamp, if they want to make that decision of like, yes, actually, it would be good to do that because it's going to be super easy on the iPhone to sign up for our service and you'll handle the payment and we'll cut you in for that. We're giving you the cut because you offer a service that benefits our business. But that's not what they're saying now. They're saying it's my way or the highway. And I think that's what rubs people wrong.
And that spins out even further into there's a little bit of a power trip situation going on, right? Because it's also not only do they have all those guidelines, but like the fact that some of those guidelines exist and go into the sort of exceptional levels of detail. Like I've seen a bunch of posts over the past few days, including one where there was somebody who had posted like, you know, hey, there's a 7-day free trial and then you use in-app purchase to buy a, you know, subscription or a membership or whatever, or unlock the features. And, you know, Apple saying like, ah, this is too prominent. You need to like rearrange where this text is displayed or how it's displayed. And it literally looked like the same. They just wanted like one text bigger or something. Or somebody was saying, this was an insane one. I saw somebody talking about like they wanted to use, I think it was the guy who made Virtual Hosts X on the Mac, and he's like, I had a client app, and at one point I was like trying to use an app purchase or something, and they demanded essentially a roadmap from me of like how are you planning on using implementing features in the future and how are you planning on playing that. And he's like, what? Like, why do I need to give this to you, right? Like, there's a definite streak in a lot of this of like some of the demands kind of getting to the point of feeling like the like the insane old monarch, like a George the Third who's lost it a little bit and is just starting to make like increasingly esoteric demands of people. And that doesn't happen across the board, but like that's the whole point. It happens intermittently and sporadically. Yeah. And some people seem to get really smacked down by it and other people seem to skate by, and a lot of times it depends on what's your App Store reviewer and like how are they feeling that day, and it just seems like bizarre at times some of the things that they demand or some of the things that they get upset about. And that just leads to a further feeling of disenchantment from developers who are writing for the platform, thinking like, man, I spent all this time and energy building out this app and now I have to like fix the stupid text because they decided the font is too small or something. I understand why, as somebody creating and trying to like make a product, it's annoying to have some of this stuff dictated to you. And the answer is, I have no choice. I just have to do it.
Yep. Yeah, it's not a good idea. It's just because we say so, because we control the platform. And again, you could say, well, it's good for Apple to control the platform, and there are lots of benefits to it. But my feeling is that when you are when you have this much control, you'll lose a lot of the benefit of the doubt, and your responsibilities change. And that's the it's similar to an argument I made before, which is, if Apple says, you know, we're going to do this, they need to actually do it properly or they need to get out. And we see that sometimes where Apple will build a feature or they'll release an app and they'll be like, okay, game's over, everybody. Apple's on the case. And then Apple doesn't ever update the app again.
Yep.
And it's sort of like, look, either play here and do it right or get out. And this is a little bit like that, where it's sort of like you need to... The bar has been raised. I don't know what metaphor you want to use here. The point is, you have an incredible amount of power, and that means that your responsibility increases. Spider-Man taught us that. And you need to understand that every single decision you make is going to be magnified. And honestly, you have to have a lighter hand at that point, or you become you come across as this kind of authoritarian regime. Right.
And you get smacked down by regulators, which
and that's right. Run. That's right. Ultimately, it's not just you should be nice because we want you to be nice. It's because your developers will get frustrated and they'll make decisions about what they do on your platform. It also means, and I know that this is hard to hear when you're riding high, but having seen Apple at a low point too, Apple was saved because of the good graces of certain developers and certain industries and certain users, because they were they wanted Apple to continue. Let's just say that if you beat up developers like this when you have the power, when there comes a moment down the road when you need the developers and you're not quite as powerful, you're not going to get their help. So keeping a good relationship with the developers that isn't just how much money did we make for you, which seems to be their attitude.
That's a very short-term attitude, right?
You
want a long-term attitude. This company's been around for 40 years. You might want to be around for another 40 years.
And then on top of it all is absolutely the hammer of regulation, the threat of regulation. Even if it doesn't happen now, what you want to do, because here's the game. The game is not let's get as much money in as possible until they regulate our company. The game is supposed to be let's keep under the radar enough that we can exert enough control to do what we want up to the point where it's going to trigger regulation that's going to make some bureaucrat somewhere or politician somewhere tell us how we have to run our business, because nobody wants that. And that's the thing that I find mystifying about this week, is that it seems to me like Apple has decided to cut off its nose to spite its face and say, no, we're in charge here. I'm in control here. Everything, you do what we say, and we'll tell you that it's for the best, even though nobody believes that. And the regulators are out there going, seriously? Do you want us to force you? Like, Elizabeth Warren was talking about, like, having Apple not be able to run the App Store anymore. Now, that seems bananas, but at the same time, like, do you want to open that Pandora's box? Do you really want to do that? And this week has been like, yeah, bring it on. What are they doing?
Yeah, it's a bizarre decision. I agree.
I
feel like you could have said nothing. You could have smoothed it over under the radar. There were so many options for handling this that were not
the out and out, you know, rejection of this app after it already had been accepted. You're picking a fight with a guy who testified in Congress against you, whose wife did that whole thing about how the Apple Card is sexist, which was a real PR black eye. Like, DHH and his wife have given Apple multiple black eyes in the past, and your response is to pick a fight with him. Now, on one level, I look at that and I say, that's actually proof that Apple's systems here are corrupt, because this is somebody they don't like and they're going to punish him, which I think absolutely happens. And that's why people are afraid of Apple, is because if you get on their bad side, they will punish you, and they're trying to punish DHH. On the other hand, I look at it and again, I say, this is not the guy to pick a fight with.
Right. I mean, there's the old saying of like, you don't pick a fight with someone who buys ink by the gallon, right? Like, but the same way, like, you don't pick a fight with somebody who's got probably what, tens of thousands of followers
and doesn't care, right?
Like, he'll
testified
go toe to toe
to Congress about you and how you need to be regulated. Like, he is in a way the last person you need to do App Store shenanigans to. And yet here we are. Now does DHH know that? And did as several developers we know, you know, to have this kind of scenario and not realize that you're taking a gamble that Apple is going to force you to put an IAP button in your login screen in order to get on iOS, you're either fixing for a fight or you've not done your job. And I'm not quite sure. My guess is that they were fixing for a fight, that they just decided they were going to do it this way, and probably the conversations behind the scenes were even more like, you know, you guys just add the in-app purchase and this all goes away, and they were like, no, we will not. And so it gets to the point where Apple is like, well, we either need to change our policy, ignore it, or smack these guys down. So I absolutely think that there's something provocative about what Basecamp did here, too, because, again, this is the guy who testified against Apple in Congress and said they should be regulated. So, of course, they were picking a fight. Of course they were. But Apple, like, took the bait. So, I mean, I want to say, like, there are a lot of arguments about, like, well, DHH, he's really annoying. He's kind of a jerk and all that. It's like, yes, I don't like him at all. But
he may not be wrong.
He may not be wrong. We don't have to necessarily like the people who do something like this. And again, I come back to the fact that I think this is just an own goal by Apple, that Apple is trying to scrape money out of developers when they need to be cultivating developers and treating them better, not worse. And the fact is, Apple's not going to, this particular revenue stream is not going to make or break their goals involving services revenue. You know, it's all going to be in-app purchases and games and stuff. The App Store revenue that matters to them is not this stuff at all. It's just not. It's just not. So I would walk away with it, walk away from it. Then again, I know they're looking at it and saying, yeah, but we get, you know, if we can sucker somebody into buying Microsoft Office 365 or Creative Cloud through an in-app purchase, then we get 30% of that instead of none. when they use the website. And so we want our cut of the suckers who bought it the wrong way. That's literally what they're saying.
Yeah. Anybody who says we want our cut or evinces that kind of behavior.
Maybe the bad guy.
Yeah.
Maybe the bad guy.
Exactly. No good person's like ever been like, I want my cut. You know, like that's
not really a line. That's why I think it's an own goal, is that the PR of it is so bad. And I know there's probably, from any of our individual perspectives, a lot of money at stake. But if you look at Apple's numbers, and I look at them every quarter, this particular aspect of in-app purchase and App Store approval, it's not worth it. It's not worth it. It is not worth it, he said for the third time, emphasizing the point. Just walk away. Just let it go. You make so much money in other places. You have so many other services, so many other sources of revenue.
It's hard to quantify, but the long-term benefits of this, I think, are potentially manifold, because if you are known as a place that's great to do business as well as being extremely profitable, that's just going to make you more and more profitable, right? Like, there are a lot of people who have come out saying, additionally, like, look, you know, a lot of the 30% that Apple takes is worth it to me to get the visibility or to be on that market. Like, I make a lot more than I would if I were not in the store, right? And that's fine. Like, I think in some ways they could even get by with that 30% if it didn't feel like they were being petty, right? And that's the thing, is like, long term, again, if you're thinking long term, it is beneficial to keep your developers happy. And that happiness is not just about money. It's about experience, right? It's about the time and energy that they are putting into their products and how you are basically respecting that time and energy. Because it is ultimately a partnership. They don't work for you. And I think Apple forgets that sometimes. And it goes back to your parasitic idea, right? Like that Apple feels like, well, we, you know, you're basically peons on our platform working for us. And it's like, that's the wrong approach to take here. These are partners. So I think that they stand to benefit more long term by not antagonizing these people, because you will get more developers flocking to your platform. Mm. And that in the end still makes you more money rather than locking anything down. Anytime you get to the point of having to lock all this stuff down and be really picky about what you're going to allow and what you're not going to allow, you are eventually going to end up in this scenario where you're going to make the wrong decisions and you're going to pick the wrong things and people are going to get upset. And I think that's just it's a stupid move. Yep. You're right. It's an unforced error.
Yeah. It's the, you took it from soccer to tennis there, which is just fine. Either way, either metaphor works. They didn't need to do it and they did it. And I think ultimately I'm just going to call it out here, because I mentioned it earlier, the parasite thing. Like, this is an Apple cultural thing from Steve Jobs. Most of Steve Jobs' cultural imports into Apple have made the company great and have served the company well. This is one that I think got imported that's bad. And it's the idea that you look at a company like Basecamp, and it's, as they pointed out, millions of downloads from the App Store for their apps. And you don't look at it and say, isn't it great that business people use that business and use our phones and they work in synergy and it makes our phones more valuable and it makes their business work and this is great. And no, Basecamp isn't giving us a cut of their revenue, but it doesn't matter because they're building on our platform and our platform is important to business customers and they're going to always stick on our platform. Great. But instead you look at it and say, why is somebody building a business that uses an app in the App Store and not giving us money? How do we get money out of them? Why are they stealing from us? And that's Apple's attitude, and that comes straight from Steve Jobs, and it has perpetuated, and it's a mistake. And when you're one of the biggest and most valuable and most profitable companies in the world, to have the attitude like you're scratching for every last penny anywhere you can, it's not a good look, and it's also dumb and self-defeating. Yeah,
it comes. I think psychologically, you know, to play a little quick armchair psychologist, I think so much of this behavior and so much of other Apple behavior comes from the era of, like, again, with the Steve Jobs
thing. They almost went out of business. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And it's the same reason they held on to so much cash for so long, right? Was like, we never want to, you know, as God is my witness, I'll never go hungry again. You know, it's that kind of attitude of, like, we remember what it was like to almost go out of business, and we've suffused our entire company with this idea that we must do everything to prevent that in the future. And that leads to viewing other people as parasites when they are taking your money. So it all ties into that.
David Sparks and I have talked on occasion about the fact that both of us have parents who were raised during the Depression and remember the Depression. My dad was born in 1931, and he would talk about the Depression. He was actually born in Oregon because his parents, who were from Minnesota, were traveling around trying to find work in the depths of the Depression, right? Like, he remembers the lean times, and remembered, he's passed away now, but and all of my childhood, I would notice him, like, his whole attitude toward life was about remembering the Depression. Like, well, what if we could, like, if a gadget broke, like an electric razor broke, he wouldn't throw it away. He would save it. And you can't fix those, but he would save it. Just what if, what, just in case. He, I could tell you, my dad could make anything jury rigged to be fixed using a wire from a coat hanger. I cannot tell you how many things he made from wire and a coat hanger in order to get this thing to work again. Just unbelievable stuff. And admirable in a way, but also clearly kind of scarring and altering your worldview to always view every situation from that perspective. And I agree with you. I do think that that's the origin of a lot of this, is Steve Jobs coming back to Apple and realizing that the thing was about to go out of business and changing the approach there in order to survive. But they're not that lean, hungry company anymore.
Exactly.
And that works in the way that maybe it's not the right move for them anymore, but also in terms of how people view them, they're just a bully now because they're so strong and they're right. Not acting. Yeah. They don't behave like they're the most valuable company in the world. Well, sometimes they do, but like I don't think it's deep seated. I don't think they think that way. I think they think that they're the poor, struggling upstart who's going to get taken advantage of, going to get taken advantage of by all their partners and stuff too. But that's not how it is. So I think it's really unfortunate. That's the other thing. Going into developer conference, it kind of takes the sheen off of that whole conversation, because it's supposed to be a week where Apple is celebrating its relationship with developers, and there are all these people who have worked very hard on the new developer forums and on all the sessions that'll happen next week. And it's all people at Apple who are working very hard to build and improve their relationship during a very difficult time with their developers. And then something like this comes along that is the unforced error and just kind of takes the shine off the whole thing and makes it, it's too bad. It's too bad for all concerned, and it didn't have to be this way. And honestly, this week has made me kind of cross the Rubicon from, you know, hearing, I still think some of the details of like what Elizabeth Warren said were ludicrous because she doesn't understand how Apple works. But yeah. I'm now at the point where I think if Apple's going to behave like this, they need to be smacked down by an outside entity, because that may be all that's left. If we can't rely on Apple to do the right thing, and they've got this amount of leverage over everybody else. And the fact is they do. You can't run a business and not have an app in the App Store. You can't. You just can't. I think at this point, if Apple can't behave like a good steward of this business, not only are they going to open themselves up to getting smacked down by the EU and possibly the US, but I'm kind of okay with it now.
That's how the system should work. That is the check.
Yeah, what I really hope is that the fear of it makes them reform, but I'm not sure they're capable of it now.
Yeah, no, I hear you totally. It seems to me that is the way. I mean, you know, people will bandy about the idea like, it's capitalism, that's how it's supposed to work. Yes, but there are limits, and there are limits on any of these things, right? And if you do get to the point where you're, you know,
that's why we have antitrust,
doing basically
right?
hostile behavior. That is why exactly we have that, right?
Yeah, if you're leveraging
capitalism,
your
can result in a monopoly.
Yeah, I've got this complete control over this thing, and then I'm going to use it for all of my other things that aren't as good, but I'm going to force them in here because of my complete control of the one thing. And you can't, as somebody pointed out this week quite rightly, just leave is the cry of the monopoly. Because they know you can't.
You can't. Yeah. I mean, yeah. You don't have to look that far back. I mean, go back past Microsoft and, you know, IBM and stuff like that to, like, you know, AT&T, right? Like, you know, there are valid cases in which the government needs to intervene in order to prevent that kind of hostile behavior. That is how the system works. It's how the system has been designed to work. You know, it's over a century of that, basically, of, like, you know, antitrust stuff. And this is, I agree with you. I think that they have, at least the people who are in charge is what this shows, right? The people who are up at the top making these ultimate decisions, not necessarily the rank and file, but the people at the top believe this. And that, to me, is the most troubling part, right? Like, when you can brush it off as like, oh, it was an overzealous app reviewer, and we have fixed this problem, and we've instituted reforms that will make sure that, like, our rules are enforced more consistently, that's one thing. But when you have... Even if Phil Schiller didn't write that note, it was posted basically alongside his name, and that is a tacit stamp of approval, and that is disturbing to me, because it is saying that the people at the highest levels think that this is okay.
Like I said, really unfortunate, bad timing.
Yeah, no kidding.
Well,
see you on Monday.
I was gonna say, we're figuring out what we're gonna do for WWDC week. I think we're gonna, when we look at the schedule, I think we're gonna try to find a way to cover those videos when they drop at 10 a.m. on those days, Pacific time. So we'll find a way to cover what's going on. That's an interesting way to do it, where you're just watching the sessions and, you know, you're not bopping around between rooms and things like that in the hall or getting it all secondhand. Like that's going to be interesting, but we'll find some ways of covering it. It'll be a very different thing. I'm looking forward to seeing what the news is and getting a lot of this stuff resolved. I'll be on Clockwise next week, so that'll be fun. I'll continue my streak of WWDC week Clockwise appearances. I'm looking forward to that.
Classic.
You know, I was going to talk about your link to the Bloomberg report about the VR AR hardware, because I was going to say that's actually the first time that I've actually been able to picture what an Apple AR device would look like. And understand that might be a product. But what's interesting about that, I mean, just to briefly touch on it, is the idea that it's basically like an augmented reality thing that's also a VR headset for games.
Yeah.
And you think Apple and games is silly, but like Apple and iPhone games and iPad games is not silly. So I think that this is them trying to get to it using, you know, their mobile side and being able to build a VR thing, which suggests that this is something that you can basically flip down the shades or whatever and turn it from augmented to a completely closed VR environment. I don't know. I can sort of see that, and having like really good augmented reality stuff. Like I can start to see how this might be a product in a couple of years, but in a way that I didn't before. And there's a lot of specificity in there. Also interesting that Johnny Ive is portrayed in that article as a real impediment to the development of that product, which I found like a fascinating take. Now that Johnny is out the door, they're like, yeah, he kept saying no, and they kept working around him, and then he left.
Yep. Yeah, it was an interesting piece. It's still, I thought the most fascinating thing about it was like they designed this one, the one that worked with like a hub. It was like wirelessly communicated with like something the size of a Mac. And I was like, interesting. Yeah, that's a different sort of take.
Well, it's like a PSVR or something, right? You've got this piece of hardware that's got graphics processing and all of that. And then you've got a really close wireless connection that's low latency and high bandwidth that is sending everything to the device. Like I can see that. And that was the thing I think that Johnny Ive was saying, like, no. Or he was against VR in general, but like having a separate box.
It takes you out of the world.
I don't know. I mean, I think that that's not a bad approach, because you get more graphics power and stuff by doing it that way, but it is more to set up and all that. I get
there's
that.
There's a lot still happening in that area, and as I said in my piece, I feel like it does remind me of, you know, the early pre-iPhone and pre-Apple Watch days, where it's like the technology exists, it is out there, but it's kind of, you know, it's not mass market yet, or at least not mass market in a way that's like broadly consumer, right? Like VR headsets have been out there. They are certainly like, you can buy one, you can play games on it today, but they're not, you know, they're certainly not at the level of a normal game console or anything like that. They're certainly not the level of an iPhone or probably even an Apple Watch, I would say, in terms of just how widely distributed they are. There are far more people who have consoles, you know, or game devices in their house that don't have VR, right? Like I've got an Xbox. There's not even a VR option for the Xbox. And I think that it's interesting, but it just, nobody has quite cracked it. And AR, I think, is even harder. There is no good thing. There's no good AR product on the market for consumers.
Right.
The HoloLens may be the closest thing. And let me
but
tell
you. But it's a business product.
I know people have worked on it, and it's not designed for consumer stuff. It's cool technology, but it's not designed for consumer applications. So yeah, that's a field that's potentially ripe. There's potentially a lot to do there. People have had high hopes for VR for decades, and we're actually getting to a point where it seems like it's plausible. And all I really care about is, will I be able to play that Star Wars game in VR? That's all I care about.
Yeah, I have to
my
admit,
cares are low.
I have to admit, I'm pricing the PlayStation VR because that will let me play that Star Wars game in VR.
Yeah, I don't even have a PlayStation, so I was like, yeah. Oh, well, is it cheaper for me to do that? Or should I just build another PC? I don't have any place to put a PC!
Yeah, I know. That's the problem.
That's the problem.
But that's the game you and I have been talking about for years now, which is they need to do another Star Wars space battle like flight game, like X-Wing and TIE
Fighter. I'm so excited. I cannot lie. I played those games so much growing up.
God.
I'm so excited for this. I already pre-ordered it because it's right up my alley.
I played those on the Mac. I had an ADB. That's how old it is. Flight stick that I
had
used.
Gravis, was that the company? Gravis, was that it? Like they
that
made like controllers, and I had a little controller that I played X-Wing on for sure. And then because I would play it at friends' houses. Actually, my friend Evan, who is married to our friend Jane on Total Party Kill, he and I grew up playing X-Wing and TIE Fighter on the PC up in like his parents' attic. I have very fond memories of that, and I'm very excited for this.
Yeah, so maybe I'll try out VR.
Something to look forward to.
It's just going to make me sick. And then my piece this week, I'll just mention it in passing, is I thought I'd just throw out there the idea of merging the concept of developing things on iPad with having the ability to like compile software and run shell scripts and all of that, and said, well, maybe they should just make a developer mode for iPad that most iPad users never use, but developers can flip into it. And at that point, they're going to build. I wonder if they're going to do essentially Xcode, but not Xcode for iPad, if that would be the way they do it, is like you really do need to kind of like unlock a bunch of stuff. They probably won't, but I wanted to throw it out there because I think that might be a way for Apple to like open the access to the platform, but limit it to people who basically are going to flip off the safety settings, right?
I don't know. Yeah.
It's not going to happen, but that's my dream. And then separately, I wrote a little link piece about how I want to remember that my biggest item on my wish list for iPadOS 14 was cursor support, and they did it before then. So let's not forget, one of my wishes was fulfilled way in advance of WWDC, and I appreciate that. So who knows what's next? I don't know. Want to make us sad?
That's for sure.
They might.
Probably.
All right, well, we'll be back next week to wrap up WWDC here on Friday, as we do. You know, we do that.
Yeah, that's the thing we do.
Uh-huh. But until then, bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.